The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
I have a category called strange, which I use for more plot related things. So if there's a talking giraffe, or if it's, you know, sort of goes into science fiction or fantasy, I have a category for that.
Imagine everything you've ever worked your whole life for and worked to accomplish just kind of getting thrown out the window because all of a sudden it just didn't matter anymore. That's what happened to me. And the only thing I could seem to find myself able to do is write.
Greetings, scribes. Welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you positivity, productivity, and prosperity per usual. And this week I've got a unique double-wide Lit Mag-themed episode that includes interviews with two pioneering souls. My first guest is Eric Harper Class, a writer and founder of the full-service short story submission service Submitit. And my second guest is Jenna Facenda, founder of Eclipse Lit, a nonprofit literary magazine. Eric Harper Class is the founder of a unique business, the world's first full-service submissions company for short story writers, submititnow.com. He's also a critically acclaimed writer whose work has appeared in a variety of journals and been nominated for multiple pushcart prizes. Eric and I talked about the sniper versus blunderbuss approaches to publishing, Zen and the Art of Rejection, how his unique submission algorithm was designed, why glossy Lit Mag queries might be a waste of time, and how to stagger your submissions. Stay calm and write on. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by a special guest. I have Eric Harper Class. What's happening, my friend?
Not much. Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Kelton.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled to be able to get to pick your brain about the submission process, the all ever-consuming and sometimes frustrating submission process for short story writers, right?
Indeed. Let's say always frustrating.
I do usually ask guests how they are surviving this very tenuous time in history. How are things in Los Angeles?
You know, it's pretty locked down here. I most of my income I make as a private SAT and ACT tutor, I'm willing to admit, and it's just dead. We've been dead since March. You know, students just aren't taking tests, so they're not getting tutored. I mean, that's part of why I rolled out Submitit, which I know we're going to talk about. But we're hanging in there. I do some curriculum development for another company, and we're okay. But yeah, there are some industries that are just killed, and test prep for sure is one of them.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's upended so many different pieces of not only education but also just people's lives and
yeah.
You know, imagine you invest all this time and energy into, you know, trying to get into a good college, or you're leaning or relying on maybe a scholarship via sports or, you know, all these different pieces, right? It's like a domino effect.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just the students who aren't getting to go to college. I had a student who got into Harvard last year and was just so pumped to be part of that community and be on that campus. And she has you know, working at home, and it's just not, you know, you get 4 years and 25% is a pretty big percentage.
Yeah. It's crazy to think, if you pay full tuition at an Ivy League school, that you're doing it like everybody else on a Zoom call.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts. I mean, you know, not to lighten the pandemic and everything. I love working from home. I'm a bit of a loner. I'm happily married and have a dog, so it's not like I'm lonely all day. So I kind of like this. I talk to my friends often enough. But yeah, for people who want to be out there and connecting and learning in a classroom, and it's rough times.
But yeah, so moving on. You are a writer and you've published stories and essays across the globe. But let's kind of wind back the clock a little bit and go into kind of the origins of this fantastic service that you offer now, Submit It, which is a full service submissions company for Lit Mags. And roll back the clock a little bit and just kind of explain the process of how you came to, you know, where this algorithm came from and, you know, kind of some of your frustrations with the process.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this started as something just for myself. I think I started out like a lot of writers. I call it the sniper approach, where you write what you think is the greatest story ever written, and you send it to, you know, maybe three or four journals, including The New Yorker and maybe The Atlantic and a few others. And you're just pretty certain it's going to get picked up. And then, of course, 6 months later, you get those rejection notes. And so I definitely went through that with a few of my stories. And then I tried what I call the blunderbuss approach, which I think is kind of the next natural thing that a writer does. I really wanted to be published. I felt like I'd been writing now for long enough. I thought my stories were good enough. So I just started sending it to everyone. And it worked. I did get published, and I got published in some pretty cool, definitely smaller, but some pretty cool journals. But man, the effort, the dozens and dozens of submissions, and you're just kind of guessing, you're just throwing shit out there and hoping that it sticks. So I started, I decided to start reading these things. I have some background in music and as a drummer, and I thought that a lot of my learning as a drummer was spent in clubs, listening to not just great drummers, but also bad drummers. I thought there was a lot of value in seeing what other people were doing.
Oh yeah.
And I sort of talked myself into doing the same thing with writing and with short stories. And I started reading journals just to learn. And I knew I was going to read some good stuff. I knew I was going to read some bad stuff, but I thought that there would be a great education, and it would obviously help me learn about these journals. So I just started reading journals, but pretty quickly I realized I wasn't going to be able to remember everything that I was reading. My first plan was, I'll just make a list of journals for myself and submit to those journals, but there were too many and I was losing track. So I started quantifying. I created some categories. I have some writer friends, and we sort of went through a couple months of trying to decide how to, you know, what's sort of an impossible task, but trying to quantify these things. So I created a spreadsheet and started putting data in. And over, I don't know, about a year and a half or so, I just read literally over 1,000 stories, hundreds and hundreds of journals.
Amazing.
And I realized, I guess, at some point that this could be for other writers, not just for myself. And mm-hmm. and that's when things I think got kind of interesting. I would keep reading a journal, even if I recognized that it was not a journal for me, but could be for somebody else. The creation of the company was largely, I think, just creating that algorithm.
Yeah.
The rest, you know, the building a website and doing all those things, that it's not nothing, but that certainly is not a separator for me. I think the algorithm is a big separator.
Interesting. That must have been fun, actually. Because I remember, when I was in creative writing school, going to the big bookstore here in town, tattered cover, and looking at those shelves of Lit Mags, and there's just so many, and they're all so very different. Some of them are wrapped in, you know, like shrink wraps. You can't really get into them.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of them are prohibitively expensive for like a starving student.
Yeah.
But that must have been actually pretty cool, a pretty cool process.
It was. It's the interesting thing about it is it's gotten worse as I've gone along. So I started with, the top journals, and and I'm still, frankly, moving my way down to smaller journals, newer journals. I also read, there's five or six annual short story anthologies that I love reading. So I obviously started there. Yeah. And now I'm working on journals, that newer journals that come up, and you know, journals with editors that aren't great. So I'd say now maybe 10% of the stories that I read, I come away slightly changed or feeling like I've read something great, and man, there's some bad stuff, but I think it's important to read that stuff. I don't know what kind of stories I'm going to get from my clients. I get some good stuff. I get some stuff that's not great. I don't need to tell the client that, but I can certainly head that story to a place that I think has a better chance of accepting it. And I'm not going to send a mediocre story to, you know, a great journal like AGNI or New England Review or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, for the most part, the process, I love reading, and I try to do a little bit every night, with short stories. So it's not terrible homework.
Well, I found, very fascinating some of these statistics that you trotted out in the article you wrote, The Single Biggest Mistake Writers Make When Submitting to Literary Journals. And the number 9,884 submissions and zero accepted stories was pretty, pretty interesting. Of course, I'll drop the link in the show notes, and I will drop the link to submit it now.com, which is where submit it lives. You can go over there, check it out, check out the services there, which we'll dig into here a little bit more. But I think it looks like you maintain a database of over 400 journals that you are helping authors to submit to. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And there are some that have a much higher rate of, you know, acceptance, which is pretty, you know, obviously you don't think about these statistics. How would writers get a hold of these statistics?
Yeah,
right?
There's a website. I recommend any writer join this website. It's called Duotrope, Duotrope. I don't work for them. So basically, what Duotrope, and they're not competitors to submit it in any way. So they are. It's basically a site that has information about just about every journal out there. Including statistics from its users. So, and there are a lot of people who use Duotrope. So I think the statistics are pretty good. So you could go to a journal like a New England Review and see how many people have submitted stories over the last, I think it's 6 months, what the acceptance rate is, how often you get a form rejection versus a personal rejection. You can also see other journals that members have submitted their work to, as well as New England Review, so it can kind of help you branch out. I use Duotrope a lot to find the journals in my database.
That's great.
And that's where I get my number. So my acceptance rates to these journals, which I do share with my clients, so they have a sense of how hard it is, are probably on the low side on Duotrope. I think they admit that people tend to, as you would imagine, over-report acceptances and under-report rejections. But it gives you an idea. I mean, it's just the top 50 or so journals are all much closer to 0% than 1%, according to Duotrope. So yeah, man, it's really hard. I don't know anyone who should enter writing fiction short stories thinking that the goal is to get submitted every couple months. I mean,
right.
it's part of the process, but I hope it can be sort of put on the back burner as not the goal of this.
Yeah, it is fascinating to think that getting published in the New Yorker is, that's not something typically new writers, they probably dream about it, but they don't realize that all of that work is kind of handpicked by the editors, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely what I call the glossy mags, like Harper's and Paris Review and The Atlantic and The New Yorker, it's almost not worth it. If I get a really strong story, or if I've written something that I think is has some potential, there's not a ton of harm in sending it to these places. I actually think most of those guys don't have submission fees. So in that sense, like, it's why not? It's kind of like applying to Harvard, even if it's a long shot,
right?
You know,
your fallback.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I think it's important to dig a little deeper with these journals. And I think that's part of what my service does. I don't, you know, unless you want to go out there and just spend, man, hours and hours and hours reading these things and exploring Duotrope or other places. I think that's one of the benefits of Submitted. It's just that you don't have to put that time in. You have to kind of trust me that I've done the work.
Yeah.
But, you know, between my top 100 and my bottom 100, I have, you know, literally a couple hundred journals that I consider pretty solid, have been around for 5 years or more. So, yeah, so I think that's part of what I'm doing here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a valiant service, and I want to say that I do appreciate the idea of kind of studying mediocre art, you know, kind of like the idea of like the really good bad movie. You come away thinking, God, I can't believe that was so bad. It was good. But on the other hand, I think, you know, kind of knowing what's out there, knowing, you know, kind of where as a literary, short story writer, kind of where your work would fall in that world. Yeah. And I will point out to listeners that, Submitted does not submit nonfiction, of course, or, genre stuff, right?
Right. Or poetry. I actually just got a request, from someone, who wanted me to submit some poetry for her because she, I'm doing a short story for her and she's also a poet. And I said, look, I would love to, but I don't know shit about poetry. I mean, I wish I did. I'd love to write poetry and read it and learn more about it someday. It's like on my list, my endless list of things to learn about. Right. But you know, my poetry goes about as far as anyone else's who took literature in high school. So I said, I don't have a, you know, an algorithm for it. So right. I could handle the submission process if she wants me to, and she can tell me where she wants me to send it. I've been doing nonfiction for the last month or so. So I think you're officially right. I'm not, you know, doing nonfiction. But I've had a couple of happy clients who asked me to do nonfiction for them. And I've decided that I think I'm okay with it. You know, it's a question of, do the category, you know, do the criteria, the way I've rated fiction for a particular journal match their tastes in nonfiction? And I think it's arguable that they probably do. So if, you know, if there's a journal that's publishing experimental, difficult, let's say lyrical, topical, fiction, I think there's a likelihood that they're probably publishing similar stuff in nonfiction. So I'm testing it, let's say. So yeah, I don't want to say I'm not doing nonfiction, but it's a little riskier in the sense that I just haven't taken the time to read as much of that with these journals.
For sure, for sure. Well, we'll look for that in the future.
Yeah.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories, wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on. But yeah, talk a little bit about the story analysis piece and kind of the 12 categories that you, I guess, are you rating, ranking, doing that kind of a thing with the algorithm?
Yeah, totally. As you're talking, I'm pulling it up so that I can literally tell you what I rank these things in. So there are, I basically have seven main categories that I score stories in on a scale of 1 to 5. And so those are, and I can kind of, these are sort of my clue words. I can kind of get into them a little more detail if I need to, but like the style of the prose, I think I call it kind of lyrical prose versus just straightforward prose. Mm-hmm. The more poetic it is, the higher that score. By the way, none of these are good or bad. They're just ways of sort of analyzing the story. Level of difficulty, that sometimes includes what I call thickness. Is there a bunch going on? Is the language hard to understand? You know, I think modernism, I would generally put as a high end or difficult. Ulysses would be a high difficulty. Mm-hmm. How topical is the story? There are some journals that really are into, you know, pandemic-related stories, COVID-19 sure. stories, you know, race-related stories that I would consider that topical, and others seem more kind of timeless in what they're looking for. Experimental. For me, experimental has to do more with form than with plot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if somebody wants to write a story that's just some guy laying in the grass, not really, you know, the less plot I say, the more experimental it is, regardless of formal experimentation. But I'm usually looking for form there. I have a category called strange, which I use for more plot related things. So if there's a talking giraffe, or if it's, you know, if sort of goes into mm-hmm. science fiction or fantasy, I have a category for that, beyond what genre fiction, of course, would entail. Is it humorous? Is it dark? So those are my big categories. I do consider quality. Without telling sort of anyone, if it's a really low quality story, I'm not going to match it up again with some of these journals that I just know aren't going to accept it. High quality stories, obviously, can shoot a little higher. And then there's these other, I call these binary categories that I just sort of, they either have it or they don't. Things like, is it historical? Is it international? Is it short? Is it long? There's a lot of interest these days on marginalized groups. So that's a binary category that I think will help you get in some journals, but some other journals just don't seem to care. And those tend to coincide with topicality as well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hope that wasn't more detailed than you wanted.
Oh, no, but that's, yeah, awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think that's invaluable for writers just starting out, because, you know, if they're not thinking about these things, they probably should be. But, you know, oftentimes when you're in the thick of things, you can't see the forest for the trees, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I was sort of forced to think about these things, because how else am I going to, you know, have hundreds of journals and get these stories from clients and figure out where to send them? At a certain point, it becomes more than just kind of remembering, oh, that might fit well here. Yeah. You know, so it's cool to, I do sort of check the numbers. I will, especially with my own work, a journal pops up and I'm like, I wonder why that one's there. And I can kind of go through and say, oh yeah, I see where I was, you know, rating the stories that journal had published. You know, and I think it's important to say it's not perfect. You remember that scene in Dead Poets Society when Mr. Keating was teaching the class? I think it was like the Pritchett method for analyzing poetry. And you graph like what was it? Importance on one axis, and you I don't know. It was hilarious. And of course, he tells them after drawing this graph on the board to tear out the page because it's shit.
Right.
So I don't claim that this is perfect, but I think it's better than not having it. And I do think it does a pretty good job of making sure that I'm sending stories to places that aren't going to just say, what the hell is that story doing on my slush pile?
Yeah. And that is really, really cool. Well, kudos, man. I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot going on here. I recommend going to submititnow.com to look at submitteds. Kind of FAQs, kind of dig in there, look at the services. It seems invaluable to me, honestly. I think writers are going to get a lot of value out of this. You know, you can choose how many journals you want to be submitted to, and you know, you can definitely communicate with Eric over there. Yeah, I was just going to say, for writers who might be looking at this in the future, you had, you know, kind of some advice if you're thinking about going it on your own. And I think it starts with reading every short story you can get your hands on, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the starting place for sure. I think that's the mistake most writers make, is not reading.
Yeah.
And I guess I say that because that's certainly what my mistake was. I would submit to journals, and when I started really doing my research, I'd read from a journal, and it was the aha moment of, oh, I see why they're not accepting my stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not even close to what they're looking for. So yeah, it's, I've written some articles about how to submit, partially obviously to market, submit it, but also just to pass on that information. I'm not really that concerned about, every writer suddenly deciding, oh, I think that's a great idea. I'm going to go spend the next, 6 months reading journals. But that is, I think, important. And like I said, I think it's important also for you as a writer to read this stuff, to kind of figure out, oh man, that metaphor that I think is so great is used in every fourth story, or the second person point of view, which I still see just all the time. Man, that is just such an overused point of view. I didn't know that until I started seeing it in every journal. So yeah, I think that's a big one. There's a few other things that I sort of discovered along the way with my own stuff. I talk about staggering your submissions. So,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't do that before. I just sent my stories out and sat around and waited. And if one story was rejected by every journal, then I'd be done with it. But now, if I believe in the story, and I should, if I'm sending it out, I just move on to round two, and start sending to journals that have higher acceptance rates that maybe aren't as high quality. But, I don't like to have a story that's never picked up by someone. I have obviously limits to what I can do with my clients, just because unless they're literally paying for me to send to endless journals. But yeah, so I'll start with the top journals and sit around for a couple months and wait, and then I'll go to the next tier down. So that's a big one. Yeah. I mean, for obvious mistakes, formatting mistakes, get that right. Every journal's a little different in what they're looking for. I see a lot of grammar mistakes. Luckily, I do a lot of copy editing. In fact, whenever I get a story from a client, I can't help but do some copy editing, even if they're not paying for it. I call it incidental copy editing. but yeah, our lack of collective knowledge of grammar is disappointing, let's say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love grammar. Mm-hmm. Again, I sort of come from test prep, so I had to learn the rules before I started teaching. But that's, you don't want something like bad grammar to throw off a reader right off the bat when they're reading a story.
Well, in addition to those submission services that you have listed over there, Eric also offers editing and consulting services, so you can take advantage of his know-how. And I understand that you're a bibliophile who also abides by the Oxford comma. So we're on the same team there. But yeah, you had a cool social media post about this library in Ojai, I believe, that just sounded like heaven.
Oh, right. Yeah. Bart's Books.
Not a library. Bookstore, right?
Bart's Books. It's a used bookstore, but sort of lovingly curated. It's not, there aren't piles of mysteries and romances, all around. It's alphabetized by author. And here's the great thing, anyone who lives near Ojai, it's outdoors. So you can go now. I don't work for them, by the way, either. But it's a wonderful place. I think my wife and I were there for a couple hours last time. We were there just talking to the guy who runs it. And we came away with piles of books. So to segue to reading, I mean, yeah, I just think as writers, I guess we all know we're supposed to read. I wonder though if we read enough. I don't feel like I read enough, but I just think that's such an important part. Whether it's reading journals, reading short stories, whether great or not great, but just reading. I can't imagine anyone writing who's not in love with reading.
I love that. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Head over to submititnow.com. Submit it. Takes the guesswork out of submitting to literary journals. And as we all know, the chances are probably slimming to getting published these days. So having some help there is really probably pretty invaluable, especially right now But yeah, is there anything you want to leave your fellow scribes with on just kind of how to persevere before we sign off here?
Just in terms of perseverance, expecting failure, expecting rejection, I think is important. It's something I try to make clear on the website. I don't want anyone to think that coming to submit it is a guarantee that you're going to get published. So, I wrote an article recently, The Zen and the Art of Rejection. And I just wanted to kind of go through some of the things I do when I get rejected. Everyone gets rejected. I have a couple clients right now. One is a multiple Pushcart Prize winner, and another one's been published in some great journals, Green Bureau Review, Narrative. I mean, these are great writers, and we talk about rejection. You know, one of them, the Pushcart Prize winner, got rejected a couple times, and she emailed, and I always email my clients, say, hey, here's the rejection, really sorry. She says, hey, this is, we've been doing this. This is part of the game. So, I hope Submitit will improve writers' chances, hopefully greatly, and take some of the pain of the whole process off their plate. But yeah, it's part of the game for sure. And it needs to be embraced, I think.
Well, we really appreciate your time, your know-how, and your dedication to helping authors get published. And yeah, submititnow.com. I also have your home base there, ericharperclass.com. Is there anywhere else you want to connect with listeners?
That's it. I'm not a social media guy. I don't have a Twitter account or Facebook, or maybe someday I'll be drawn in. But yeah, the websites are pretty good. I do use email, though. You can find me there.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your time, and stay safe out there. And then we'll stay tuned for more nonfiction submissions in the future.
Sounds great, Kelton. It was really, really a pleasure talking to you.
In the second segment of the show, I chatted with inspiring Philadelphia native and writer Jenna Facenda, founder of Eclipse Lit. Eclipse Lit is a nonprofit literary magazine founded on a mission to give artists a medium to heal while benefiting organizations dedicated to helping people facing trauma. After losing her fiancé to suicide and finding solace in the transformative power of writing, Jenna set out to provide a forum for others who have suffered. In this file, Jenna and I talked about the writer's journey and healing through art, her dedication to helping lift other writers out of the darkness, raising mental health awareness and support, and how to start a nonprofit literary journal. And listen, if you or a loved one are in distress and would like some emotional support, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Network is available 24/7 across the United States. Whether you've struggled with suicide yourself or have lost a loved one, know that you're not alone. If you're in crisis, talk to someone now at the Lifeline. Call 1-800-273-8255 or text TALK to 741-741. And we are back on the Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by a very special guest. I've got Jenna Facenda, founder and marketing executive for Eclipse Lit. Thank you very much for taking the time to do this today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, we were discussing a little bit earlier. You're in Philadelphia, so you're a Philly native.
Yes, I am.
And how are you surviving this pandemic up there in Philly?
Well, it has been nothing short of interesting. Definitely can say that I've at least got a lot of reading done during this pandemic, but also being a single mom, dealing with virtual school and working from home, it has been a journey.
Right. Yeah. And we've all been kind of doing this back and forth with the kids, should they be there? Should they be at home? Mm-hmm. What if they are at home and you're trying to work and help them to, all the things? It's just, it really is juggling a lot.
Oh, it is so chaotic. It really, really tests your multitasking and your patience skills.
Yeah. I think it's made me a better person, but I can't tell.
Oh, yeah. Ask me again in 6 months.
These kids are resilient, but, I think the different age groups and the different social dynamics make it really challenging for everybody.
Agreed. I completely agree.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about writing. Let's talk about all the things writing and get into this fantastic mission and nonprofit of yours. And yeah, maybe turn the clock back for us as we do with so many other writers and just kind of talk about, you know, how you've found writing, first of all, and then where you are now.
Yeah, well, writing found me, I would say, as early as middle school. It's definitely one of those classic, my English teacher told me that I was good at it type of stories. And because I've always been a lover of writing stories, that has always been my outlet and my escape from reality, as well as my coping mechanism as I've gotten older. I actually dove into novel writing heavy throughout college and started going to things like conferences, started doing workshops, meeting other writers. I started my own writing business with my best friend, Rachel.
Yeah.
That dived us into a completely, completely different journey that has been absolutely amazing. And then it got to the point where I started learning, the more I love about writing, the more I learned about publishing. And now I work in publishing and I run a writing business. I have a novel I've written and some short stories and poems in different publications. So it's really been just this whole wild journey I didn't expect, really just leading from my passion of just sitting down and just writing whatever comes to mind and whatever I'm feeling in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a stream of consciousness.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about that because you've had an interesting and, of course, a challenging journey. And talk some about, you know, you mentioned the coping mechanism piece, but I think, you know, when we talk about some of your mission with Eclipse Lit, which, you know, kind of strives to provide healing through art, right?
Yes.
What we're talking about, in a sense, is kind of like art therapy. And talk a little bit about that and yeah, kind of the difference there.
So it is definitely art therapy. You hit it right on the nail with calling it that, because it's exactly what we're trying to promote through Eclipse Lit. It kind of all came from my own journey of losing someone close in my life to suicide in November of 2019. And it was a really, really, really dark period of my life where, imagine everything you've ever worked your whole life for and worked to accomplish, just kind of getting thrown out the window because all of a sudden it just didn't matter anymore. That's what happened to me. I had a solid 4 months where I just felt like I was in this dark period of anxiety and depression. And I had so many questions. And the only thing I could seem to find myself able to do is write. And not necessarily sit down and write a story or have an end destination, but just write whatever was coming to my mind. It's what would chase my anxiety away. And it really was my saving grace, in a sense, as I went down this journey of grief and depression. And of course, I got into counseling and there was other outlets I used, but writing was definitely the one that stuck with me the most. And I always knew I loved writing, but this time I was using it differently. And that was to heal myself. And that's kind of where the idea for Eclipse Lit came, was using writing to heal moments of darkness and trauma. Because I realized with all the pain and stuff that I was going through, I'm not the only person going through this. I'm not the only person that lost someone. And there's other people out there like me who are dealing with loss as well as dealing with depression and anxiety themselves. So Eclipse Lit for me was kind of being able to create a community that is helping to heal other people struggling with these issues, teaching them, whether they aren't writers already or they are, just teaching them the power that comes behind just sitting down and writing to heal, not really for an end destination. And really, I wanted to be able to also bring a voice to these writers, these artists, and kind of shed light and create a community around this whole situation. Because a journey like this is very isolating. And when people feel isolated, that's kind of when the dark stuff happens. And I kind of wanted to make people feel like, hey, you are not alone.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. And yeah, I mean, obviously, when you're speaking with somebody who's lost a loved one to suicide, it can probably be easy to don't know what the term is, but to not maybe approach it properly in conversation. And I know that you can't find the words oftentimes to express empathy or compassion, but losing a loved one is one thing, but losing a loved one to suicide is a completely different thing. What, talk a little bit about those conversations and kind of like, I don't know, just some of maybe your pet peeves when people talk to you about it, who kind of can't wrap their head around it.
I'd honestly be lying if I said that I knew the right way to talk about this, because even now I still am trying to figure out how to describe what even happened, because even I went through it and I still feel myself getting scared bringing it up to other people or saying it in a public space, because I feel like the talk of suicide and depression and mental illness is still, as much as the conversations are starting and becoming open, it's still so taboo. There's still a whole part of society out there who it's shameful for them. It's uncomfortable to talk about. It's more of a, let's keep quiet, let's just not acknowledge it, and then maybe it won't happen. But the scary part about that is when you do that, that is when things like people committing suicide or hiding their feelings or not healing happen, because you need to have a conversation. You need to be able to talk about it. But it's the most uncomfortable thing to talk about. But I do it because my thought process with it is if I talk about it, then other people will know it's okay for them to talk about it, or it's okay that they're thinking about it, or it's okay that they're not alone in this. Now, for me talking with other people in my life, thankfully, the people close to me who knew the person are very, very open about it.
Yeah.
And that is helpful and healing to me. But to people who maybe haven't lost someone to suicide, you can sense the uncomfortableness on their face or in their tone, because it's, what do I say that might offend someone else? But really what it is the person who lost someone, they want to talk about that person all the time, no matter how it happened. And it's okay to open a conversation, and it's definitely okay to ask questions if unsure of how to word it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as you put it, I mean, I think it's, and part of Eclipse Lit's mission is to bring these things to light. Right. And as you describe it, that, you know, the eclipse is temporary. So, and I love this metaphor, because this is something that we just need to remind everybody about. I mean, the eclipse could be anything, really, but I think it's a power. It's definitely got some power.
Oh, that's exactly how I feel. What really fascinated me about it the most was that when you think of eclipse, the moon is smaller than the sun, but yet still it casts this shadow, this complete darkness for a period of time. And when somebody goes through something traumatic in their life, whether that's losing someone or abuse or a family situation, whatever it is, that is what it feels like in life. It feels like there's this darkness and you have no clue when it's going to end. You're hoping it's going to end soon. You don't know what to do. And that's kind of the scariest part at times. So with Eclipse Lit, I wanted to be the reminder that, hey, you know, the sun is coming out. Here's the light. Because sometimes when you're in this situation, it's hard to remind yourself that.
Exactly. Well, you know, just kudos to you for undertaking the mission. But yeah, talk about the birth of Eclipse, and you know, how it established itself as a nonprofit literary magazine, kind of where it is in its life cycle, because you really just launched recently, right? And you're just working on your first edition, correct?
Yep. Yes. So I'm actually completely blown away how fast this thing has grown, and I am so humble. I launched this in the 1st of October. So it was an idea, and I'm a huge planner. Like if I was to talk to you about Rightly Me, you would hear my years worth of plans, my marketing plans, my business plan, all that stuff. But with Eclipse Lit, it was just an idea that I just had a feeling I knew I needed to run with it. And so I launched October 1st, and we held submissions open until November 15th. During that time, I was also running a fundraising campaign, which I still am, to get all of our operation expenses together. So we could print all of the magazines out and be able to distribute them and give voices to the artists who are submitting. Over that course from October 1st to November 15th, I've received over 200 submissions, which completely threw me off. And at this point now, in December, we have raised $1,200 towards an $1,800 goal for this. And I started this thinking, I'll be lucky if I get $20. So when I saw how much support I got around it and how many people were reaching out to me or thanking me or just saying that they too are going through this struggle or that they too lost someone, that means the world to me because it's telling me that what I'm doing is what I'm meant to be doing right now. So yeah, it's been really amazing. Our first issue is set to come to production in March. I just brought on an editor and an intern, which I never thought I would have had an intern. And I'm currently working with a local bookstore to set up our launch event and fundraising event in May, which is going to support the Philadelphia chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, because they're our first organization that we are dedicating this issue to.
Amazing. Well, congratulations on the response thus far. Of course, I will drop links to eclipselit.org. And then also you can click on the donate button there. And I will drop the direct link to that campaign as well through Culture Trust Greater Philadelphia. And yeah, that's so awesome. And of course, you know, you have some bigger goals and kind of, yeah, what I guess you're really just focused on this first printing, huh?
Yes. Yeah. I'm focusing on getting this issue into the hands of as many people as I can, as well as really right now we're taking these next couple weeks to sort through all the submissions, because I'm trying to go through as many rounds as possible to make sure that I am giving my best self when reading them, as well as my editor. So we've been really taking our time reading through all these powerful pieces, and we are so grateful for the people that trusted us with their words.
Yeah. Yeah. Helping lift others out of the darkness and writers as well. You know, I'm sure that there's a lot. I mean, this is a very timely subject because there are probably a lot of writers that listen to this show that are, you know, just kind of suffering from the, you know, the this pall of this isolation that we've all been dealing with. Yeah, what do you want to say to them?
Honestly, you're not alone is the biggest message I want to give to anybody. And also, don't ever stop writing. That can go with for your mental health. And just in general, as a writer, as someone who I'm also still putting stuff out there, just don't ever stop and make sure you're writing for you. Because at the end of the day, you are what's most important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about, are you currently in an MFA program or?
So I was. I took a break due to this lovely COVID situation and working from home. Right now, my efforts go towards, I'm a marketing executive for a publishing house. So I split my time between that, working on Eclipse Lit, and working on Rightly Me with my business partner.
Amazing. And talk a little bit about Rightly Me and kind of what you're doing over there.
Sure. So Rightly Me, we started that in 2015. It was a passion project. It was me and my business partner, Rachel's, way of trying to create a writing community, because we were so excited and nerding out about starting this writing journey, is what we call it. And we talk about that a lot in our business. But we create courses and products to help people create their stories, as well as help them through mindset difficulties like overcoming self-doubt, dealing with just kind of the blocks you face on the journey yourself in terms of like comparison or wondering if your story is not good enough. And really, yeah, we work hard on, we have a great community over there of writers, some new, some just people who are just looking to connect back to the basics and they're taking care of their mindset.
Yeah. I love that mindset stuff. You know, I often ask very famous writers about imposter syndrome. And I think that's some of what you're referencing there, mm-hmm. and many, many very prolific and best-selling authors do suffer still from this phenomenon. It's not uncommon.
Oh, yeah. I feel like no matter what part of your writing journey you go on, that just doesn't go away. It's because there's always constantly, there's facing the, okay, I did this, but is it good enough? And I feel like that just comes as being a writer and an artist. And then there's the, it's out there, I could do more. And if our biggest thing is that we teach people is getting your mind ready, because if your mind's not in a good place, you're not going to create your best work, and you're not going to be kind of where I get back to writing for yourself, kind of creating that writing life that you want.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I love your mission to connect art and activism and provide a healing venue. And the art therapy piece, I think, is critical right now. And I think it probably is helping a lot of writers. Even, you know, we've talked about this because it's a very solitudinous endeavor already. But, you know, now we don't have the option to pop down to the coffee shop to do editing or meet up with our colleagues and our fellow scribes for a cocktail, sadly.
Oh, I miss that.
Me too. Very much so. Well, Eclipse Lit is a fantastic organization. EclipseLit.org is doing some great things over there. So pop over, check it out. When are you going to reopen for submissions for the next issue?
So we are keeping it annual right now to make sure we're giving all of our time and attention to each issue that we do. So submissions will open again October 1st, 2021, with hopes in the future then to be biannual.
Yeah, yeah. Eclipse Lit, you are on Twitter. I will drop the link to that. I will drop the link to resources for suicide awareness and prevention, of course, rightlyme.com. And where else do you want to connect with the listeners out there? I think I got them all.
Yeah, I think if I spread myself any thinner, I won't be able to show up as my best self. So those are all good.
Well, congratulations on Eclipse Lit. And we'll look forward to hearing more from you, I think, in the future, just on how it's going and how you're feeling about everything.
Yeah, thank you so much for this. I really do appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.